Thank you, Barry. And Elvira is my partner in crime, and both of us have partner of crime in a good way. I think Barry said we have 12 minutes, so it's 6 and 6. So let's get started. No relationships with these girls, except I guess that we are married and we have kids, but no financial relationships. So one of the reasons we thought we'll talk about the challenges of the MDGs, which are the Millennium Development Goals, which were kind of drafted in 2000, and the deadline, the clock is ticking, because after 2015, officially the Millennium Development Goals, they won't shut down, but they will be called like the Sustainable Development Goals. So one of the things we wanted to really focus on is evaluate the progress, and also we'll discuss the challenges made till the present for the MDGs 4 and 5. As you know, 4 is to reduce infant mortality, and 5 is to improve maternal health, that is by reducing maternal mortality. Unfortunately, there has been a lot of progress made. It's not like the bottle is half empty. Definitely it's half full. But unfortunately, the bottle is half empty when we're talking about the three MDGs, 3, 4, and 5. Because 3 also talks about empowering women. So all these are kind of interlinked. It's like a three-dimensional puzzle. So one of the things is, as I talked about, goal 4 of the MDG is to reduce child mortality. So I just want to run through briefly what progress has been made from 2000 to 2012. That's 12 years old. So there has been considerable progress made. And one of the things is, as you can see, that in many developing regions, including parts of Southeast Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa, the mortality rate has declined from 97 to 35 per 1,000 live births. So 35% from 97 to 63 in 2010. But even then, there still are challenges. And Elvira is going to talk more about the challenges. So I'm just going to, you know, make you all happy, and then Elvira will come and say, no, Minnie, it's not everything great. We do have shades of gray. And the other thing... the other thing also is, this is really important, that the number of under 5 deaths have fallen from 12 million in 1990 to 7.6 million in 2010. And I just want to say that these numbers really represent people, they represent children. And one of the things is, this data is according to the latest by the UN in 2012. As we all know, having worked in different arenas in the area of health, that these numbers can be a lot more, because a lot of times we don't have the correct data. But even then, that is something we need to rejoice about. And the other thing is, this is what I really like, that 14 out of the 66 countries with at least 40 under 5 deaths per 1,000 live births reduced it from 1990 to 2010 by half. So this is also progress. Again, I'm looking at the happy aspect. And this is really great, because these countries like Timor-Leste, Bangladesh, and Nepal, which are some of the poorest countries in the world, have woken up to the fact that they need to take care of the children, and these have shown considerable reductions in these countries. Okay, now we're moving on from babies to moms, because, Dr. Alan Rosenfield, whom we all have a lot of respect for, who was a mentor to so many of us, in his groundbreaking article in The Lancet said, where is the M in MCH? So now we're focusing on the M, because we focused on the C. Unfortunately, the indicators for this are lagging behind. But according to a report released by The Lancet after a 10-year study, that from 550,000 deaths, it was supposed to have come down to 287 deaths. And again, Sub-Saharan Africa, unfortunately, accounts for 56% of these deaths, and Southern Asia is 29%. So again, MMR, if you look at the whole region, and this is, please remember that we look at maternal mortalities per 100,000 live births. So this again reduced from 440 in the 1990s to 240 in 2010 for the developing regions. You know, whenever I talk, like all of us, we talk a lot because we want to give the message across. I tell my students or my young residents that there is no cure from eternal mortality, but it is preventable more than 95% of the time. So that's what we need to be focusing on when we are looking at the triumphs of the MDG5. So what are the factors? And I think I'm doing good on time because I don't want to eat up into Elvira's because, you know, she might kill me on the way out. So we have expanded coverage for measles, tetanus vaccine, which is administered. I mean, those of us who have worked in the developing countries know how crucial it is to give a pregnant woman her doses of tetanus vaccine because you don't know where she's going to deliver. We have antenatal care. And then there's a reduction in teen pregnancy because more girls are going back to school. So if we have water supply, then girls go back to school so they don't get pregnant. I mean, these look so simple, but believe me, they've really helped to get the indicators up so far. And then the single most important thing, not that all the others are not important, last but definitely not the least, one of the most important is SBA, skilled birth attendance, which we all know about. So I can tell you that having worked in developing countries, and actually I was working in Malawi on a safe motherhood project with the former First Lady of Malawi, that we have this program at New York Medical College and Malawi to just to teach them about what safe motherhood is. So there's a way of what we're trying to develop is teaching the young nursing students who come here to Westchester Community College. They're funded, so they study and they go back into the community. So the skilled birth attendance means not only the doctors, nurses, midwives, everybody, so that these women, the traditional birth attendants, are trained. So this has really, and this is great because from 55 to 65, it rose 10%. Don't tell me it's only 10% because Elvira will talk about that. As I said, I'm a happy camper now. It's early on Monday. So now, with that being said, I hand it over to Elvira to discuss what the challenges are and what we can do. Thank you so much.
Hello, good morning. There's something very important that I'd like you to remember. In global health, working internationally, where you live determines your survival. And if you're a woman, it's even more important because you don't have access. I think as a woman, as a health professional, as a mother of three daughters, I believe that we have to do something in this generation, that we have to really bridge that big divide. And so I'm very happy to see you all here looking at the really challenges from a global perspective. Until the year 2000, we didn't even have global goals. So now we have goals, and on top of that, we have started to measure how effective we are in reaching those goals. So that's a very basic concept, but until the year 2000, it hadn't happened. It's unbelievable, but it's true. So the main challenges are that we have all these reports. If you Google the MDG report for 2011, you'll see all these very nice graphs, and things seem to be moving in the right direction, as Mini was saying. But as public health professionals know, that really covers up lots of geographic and variations. If you look into detail, into even within each country, even in the U.S., you know the difference between one zip code to another. Well, you go to one state to another state in Nigeria, and you lose 20, 30 years of lifespan. So looking at that variation, geographic variations, is very important. Not to say that, oh yes, we're doing such a great job and pat ourselves in the back. We have to be more responsible as professionals in public health to understand that these are good indicators of the start, that we are moving in the right direction, but we have to really look in more detail as to the differences within geographic differences, ethnic groups, minorities, and different religious groups, to really do a better job of meeting the needs of every community. Number two, the next challenge is that we don't have a global health surveillance system yet. So these data come from numbers that are collected sometimes in health facilities that are writing in pieces of paper that nobody checks, nobody makes sure that they're complete or accurate. So the source of this data needs to be improved. That's the second challenge. And the third challenge is that we have to look at better ways of meeting the needs of women in developing countries. As a global health professional, I must admit that we don't have still effective ways of meeting the needs, understanding the needs, and really providing quality care. In rural Nigeria, for instance, over 80% of the mothers prefer to deliver at home because they're mistreated, insulted, and disrespected in health facilities by health professionals. So we still don't have good ways of meeting the cultural and basic human rights of women, our sisters, in developing countries. So I want you to remember those three, okay? Now, as global health professionals, we are the helpers that help the helpers. So that's what we do. We help the helpers. We help those health professionals in other countries to be better at what they're doing, to deliver better health services. So our job is to be better ourselves so we can help them better. And that's why we need to be better at innovating and really bringing those improvements in public health that are really going to have critical impact on reaching MDGs 3, 4, and 5, as Mini was saying, improving the gender equality, number 3, improving child mortality, and number 5, improving maternal mortality. Most of the innovation now is funded by foreign donors through global aid programs, but it's not a global understanding of how is the best way to meet these needs. So we need to be better at implementing programs that are really the most effective and measuring effectiveness. We need to involve the local health professionals. Sometimes donors come with very good intentions and they want to help, but they create parallel structures and they bring solutions that are not understood or sustainable by the local system because we think we understand, but we really don't know because we don't live there. They are the ones that run the system. They are the ones that know what needs to be done. So we need to find solutions jointly. And that sometimes doesn't happen because people want to implement projects. They want to eradicate polio, so they bring in their polio things and disrupt the whole routine immunization system of the country. Now, the next is that we need to look at a more concerted approach. We need to work together. And I think I always talk about APHA in developing countries because we have different affiliates and different states working together. At least once a year we get together and we look at ways of working better together and exchanging experiences. That doesn't happen in developing countries. That doesn't exist yet. So imagine the U.S. 150 years ago. So that's where we are, and we have to bring them quickly to the 21st century. There's three effective ways now that I believe, in my experience, are good ways of helping the helpers in these countries better. As you come, as maybe funded by USAID, funded by the Gates Foundation, the Clinton Foundation, if you're going to have a better impact and do your share of contributing to reach the Millennium Development Goals, because each of us does our own share, there's three things you need to remember. Country leadership. Find who's the leader and ask them, how can I help you? What are your problems? What is your most important priority? Second, try to look at their career development. So sometimes you see a health worker in a health facility that's mistreating a mother. That person has been probably working very long, many hours, has another 50 patients outside, and feels stuck in that job. So sometimes having a conversation, looking at how, what are you going to do? Are you going to keep in this job for the next 10 years? Or you want, no, I would like to do this. And then looking at ways that they can develop themselves and helping them broaden their horizons is very helpful. And number 3, looking at organizational development, how we can improve community-based programs, facility-based programs, reorganizing in a way that is simple. Because of all these donors coming in, the system has become so complex, so fragmented. You have UNICEF doing one thing, WHO doing another one. All donors come with their way. And the confusion is very big. So try to simplify. Effective help, as I said, ask people, how can I help you? If there's credit, sometimes donors implement projects and they celebrate achievements. It's not their own achievements. You have to celebrate the credits and give it to the to those that are actually implementing there. And remember that you may feel that you've done maybe 80%, but it's in fact, it's their country. And if you look at it realistically, they have done 80% and you have done 20%. So look for that balance. And in career development, what do you want to achieve in your career? Interact with other health professionals as peers. Respect them as health professionals. And then especially look at patient flow and how to jointly send new principles. Here I'm going to leave you with a number of steps that if you're implementing a global health program, it would be helpful to improve your effectiveness. So here are some references, and you can contact anytime, and thank you very much.